Welcome to the Blockchain DNA Podcast. This show brings you the latest in blockchain technology and global developments in business and fintech. Presented by Metaverse DNA.
We heard so many angles, and now we want to take it to our next guest, which is Andy Tang from Draper University. Andy, are you out there? I'm waiting for tech to put you on. Let me introduce Andy Tang. I know everybody wanted to see Tim Draper. Tim had to be excused shortly before this meeting due to a family emergency. Andy Tang is his close associate. He is the managing director of the Draper Dragon Fund, amongst a lot of other things. I think what's very interesting to make the bridge to the Metaverse DNA project is that Andy Tang is actually a specialist in connecting USA economic development in companies to the Chinese market. So he's very knowledgeable. He was born in Taiwan, so he speaks fluent Mandarin, which I don't speak. Sorry, Andy, it's not going to work this time. I don't bring it further than how and say thank you in Chinese. But I think Andy Tang is also the CEO of Draper University. He also engages in as an investment partner in Draper and Associates. He's very well embedded in, I would say, growth markets. But I think one of the key drivers is what we took away from the analysis of our previous speaker, George, who was, of course, a fantastic university-based analyst, that he comes from a background in Cyprus, which is an enormous digital university. I know they run a course online free of charge that already enlisted 300,000 people just getting explained what is a blockchain, what is a cryptocurrency. I'm very happy to see you, Andy. I'm so thrilled that you took the opportunity to step in at the last page. We for sure have Tim on another occasion on one of our interviews. I have to honestly commit that I don't know what you're going to talk about because the switch was made so shortly before this meeting. So I'm giving the floor to you, Andy. Very much welcome Great. To you. Basically, we're very interested to the, I would say, the view that you have, decentralized finance, especially into the growth markets in Southeast Asia.
Absolutely. Just a technology check. Can you give me a thumbs up? You can hear me okay, clearly?
Very good.
Excellent. All right, good. And also, just logistics check. We have about 20 minutes before the next speaker. Is that okay?
The next speaker is me, so I'll give you all the floor.
Oh, great. I'm already immersed in the all the wisdom of the next speaker. Excellent. Great. Good. So I had a few slides I prepared, but I'm having technical difficulty in sharing. So I'll kind of just describe what I'm going to talk about very briefly.
Perfectly so, fine. I'm already great, very grateful that you onboarded at such short notice. I know. Just happens.
Happy to be here. Metaverse is a great partner of ours. We have been working with them for the last 4 years. It truly is a wonderful foundation. We think that the progress this community, this cryptocurrency community, have made in the last 4 years, which is amazing. The topic I would like to talk about today is decentralized finance and how it relates to global economy, given the uncertainties brought on by the pandemic, right? You know, in the Chinese language, the word for crisis is the same word as opportunity, right? So we at Draper ecosystem truly believe that it's actually very sad what has happened to humanity. But if you put that aside and say, how do we look forward, we truly are excited about the opportunity ahead of us, right? And it's abundant, and it's beyond just blockchain. But I will focus on decentralized finance today. As a first step, if you would indulge me to just describe to you what the Draper ecosystem is, so that hopefully give you a bit more perspective of the things I'm sharing with you, it's really based on wisdom of many people, not just Tim, not just myself, not just, you know, our partners, over 10 partners in Silicon Valley, but it's over 50 investment partners around the world. So the Draper ecosystem has over 25 funds globally, and we all engage in early stage investing.
I didn't even know that we're that many, Andy, to be honest. I know you're extremely active already, like longer than everybody wants to remember. But I didn't know that many. 25 is
extraordinary. Yeah, I have a hard time citing each one of them, but I recognize the people by the faces. And if you give me a city, if you give me a city in the world, more likely than not, let's say if you give me a city in the world that has an airport, more likely than not, we might have some sort of office there. And that is the idea we have in democratizing entrepreneurship, right? George talked about democratizing finance, banking the unbanked. So we believe democratizing entrepreneurship would actually enable a lot of things, such as blockchain, such as cryptocurrency, such as finance. And today I wanted to talk to you about Draper and how we look at the history to project the past, right? So we have been investing in technology companies for the last 30 years, and there's one technology that stood out more than anything else that we think had transformed multiple industries, and that's internet. Internet has transformed telecom, it has transformed media entertainment, it has transformed communication, it transformed industrial, it transformed corporate software, and most recently, it has transformed financial services, right? And we believe this trend will continue, right? And this is one technology, right? And internet as a technology kind of morphed into different things like share economy, right? Mobile technology. And most recently, we see blockchain. That in our mind is merely a transformation of internet taking to the next level, right? And I have this concept of a, this blockchain revolution is really what I call an internet square, because it's really the of two products, right? It's the computational power. Your computer gets faster, and then your Wi-Fi router gets faster, right? So communication and computing, that's the fundamental of what enables blockchain, right? I think basically every one of you have a computer in your pocket, right? And that's your phone, right? And then this computational power is basically as powerful as a bank computer, you know, from 20, 30 years ago, right? And then the bandwidth you have here is as powerful as a, you know, broadband router of a bank, you know, from 10 years ago.
I come from the green monochrome screen, you know, the little small thingies. Right. Right. Computer, well, I think it was 13.6 kilograms. It was, you know.
Now you're getting your money worth in these smaller devices.
So
I think this is very exciting that you're packing all this technology. Essentially, each one of us can serve as a bank, right? So when that happens, many more opportunities open up, right? So in this crisis, what we see is that it's forcing the speed of adoption, right? And we're seeing this in other industries. We're seeing this in education, in healthcare, right? Suddenly, children are forced to stay home. So distance learning has been talked about for decades, right? Even when internet first came about, people talk about online schools, but it did not take off. But I tell you what, because of the crisis, distance learning will take off, right?
Yes.
Healthcare, right? Everybody's now a healthcare expert. We all know that a vaccine used to take 4 years, right? But now the new vaccine may take 1 year. Why? Because of the crisis. People are asking, why does it take 4 years? Can we shorten it? The answer is yes, right? The same thing is going to happen to blockchain. People are going to ask, why does it cost so much to bank? Why does it cost so much to send payment, right? It used to be, all right, let's let natural adoption take place in maybe 10, 20 years, blockchain completely become mainstream. But because of the crisis, there's a chance. And you're going to ask me, well, that's interesting because I could see education, I could see healthcare. That's very obvious because of pandemic. Why blockchain? Why DeFi, right? And I'll tell you why. It has to do with government services, right? I talked about internet disrupting many industries. There's one industry that hasn't been disrupted, and that is government, right? It's government because it's regulated, right? So it's very difficult to disrupt the regulators. And I'm not proposing some overhauling, you know, the government political governance structure. So I'm actually not political at all. I'm a technologist. I'm a business guy, right? So I look at commercialized adoption and funding companies, and my business, my trade, is investing in companies that have a working technology, working product, and I bet on their risk of getting commercially adopted, right? So I think government services may have a chance in the next 10 years. And the reason why I say that is because of this. Government has become the biggest spender in the last 3 months, right? You see the U.S.
Yes.
Right? Biggest spender, right? But if you have a biggest spender and the way they spend is by giving money to the constituents, to the citizens, so they could spend, right? It requires a very efficient system to disperse payment. If you look at the U.S., is one example. There are other countries I'm not as familiar with, but just U.S. as an opportunity, U.S. government as an opportunity, the largest employer on earth, bigger than anything else, largest employer, right?
Incredible.
So do you think it has a good IT system? No, right? I can tell you it doesn't.
Probably not. It's interested that you just said that, because Eric started out by explaining that the issuance of these checks that are going to be in the U.S. Specs for civilians, it's going to take them up to mid-July.
Yeah,
and by
yeah.
Now, you know, they're 3 months in the pandemic and they need it.
Yeah. In what world do you have a vendor giving products to its customers and the lead time is 3 months? That vendor will go out of business, right? The vendor will go out of business.
Yes, right? Sir. But I think if you look at the possibilities that the government has for change, based upon the system that they have, change is going to be very slow. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did see change forced. Yeah. You said they were forced to the speed of adoption of the pandemic. Yeah. We saw it everywhere. Yeah. Every government that was too late had to do something because crisis was on the doorstep. And I think if you look at all these things that emerged from that, it's a positive development. Yeah. Do you think if you look back at to what Eric said about digital identity, about having a new way of communicating, about, I would say owning data is going to be a major influence. I wouldn't say disruptive, but simplifying the government issue. Like, you know, extending your passion, expanding your opinion, maybe having, I would say, direct way of voting with your feet and now with your phone, basically, by, contributing whatever you have as an asset, as value.
Right. So, absolutely, right? It government structure was formed pre-computers, right? And definitely pre everyone having personal computers, and absolutely before everyone having mobile computers, right? So with every other industry that has been transformed, right? The taxi industry has been transformed. The phone industry has been transformed. We're seeing education is being transformed. We're seeing healthcare getting transformed, right? We're seeing the financial services getting transformed. Right, previously unthinkable. I think it's a matter of time before government gets transformed. Now the question is, why does a pandemic serve as a catalyst for this? Right. So Eric pointed out the checks takes 3 months. Right. If you look at the checks that are being distributed, the social security systems or the Small Business Administration, they are running on 40-year-old COBOL computers, right? So government used to be the most sophisticated technology user 40 years ago, right? 40 years ago, you didn't have a computer. I didn't have a computer, but they had a computer. But the problem is the rest of us have moved on and they kind of stayed, right? So I'm the first one to say, I think the citizens will push the government to change, right? The citizens will be fed up with the government and say, hey, I needed this check 3 months ago, right? And the politicians will gradually come up and say, all right, let's figure out a way to upgrade our IT system. And that's what I'm proposing. I'm not saying, you know, controversial things like, hey, maybe we should get rid of, I mean, there are very controversial things I could think of. For instance, I don't need all the politicians because the citizens could directly vote on issues and get rid of all the intermediaries, right? So, but I'm not proposing any of that. I'm going for the low-hanging fruit, and that is let's just adopt a, you know, an identity system like Eric was saying, because government, what does it provide? It provides military, it provides road, it provides security, it provides insurance services, social security, it provides a government ID for identity, it provides a payment system. Let's go for the really non-controversial, low-hanging fruit, right? The core government stuff, I don't want to touch because I think that would take a long time. But if I just replace a better payment system, better identity system for the government, a better computer system, that is a trillion-dollar industry. That is the biggest venture capital has ever seen, literally, because, you know.
If you take that to emerging economies, which is, I would say, the largest, you know, population on the planet, let's be honest, okay? Right. The further we leave them behind, the more problems that we have. That's my personal view. You know, if you got nothing to lose, you go to somewhere where there's more to be had, basically.
Right. The major
problem. Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, I don't blame anybody for feeling that way about their family. I would feel probably the same if I was in that position. Yeah. So if you look at these, I would say, not say disruptive, but I would say evolving systems that under the influence of now the speed of this pandemic, which is inevitable. Yeah. I mean, you can't escape it. It's there. What do you see are the first opportunities these people have in value transmitting in systems and that? Where do you see the first, I would say, almost entrepreneurial angle to make this all work? Because actually, entrepreneurs are going to be the bridge, right? They're going to be the bridge between change.
Absolutely. So our prediction, we're very excited about entrepreneurship, especially in the time of crisis, change, or transformation. I think after this pandemic, the post-pandemic world, two types of companies survive. The ultra-large companies with very strong balance sheet, and this is the Coca-Cola, this is the Harvard University, right? Got big brand, lots of money. They're going to survive. And they will survive regardless. They don't even make change. They'll survive, right? And then on the other end, you have the really small ones. You have the two people and a dog. These people will survive because they will adopt a change, because the rule of the game will change, right? Suddenly, you know, just as basic as like a restaurant, suddenly will be run differently. Movie theater will be run differently, right? Hotels will be run differently. So if you are a mid-size hotel chain or travel company, I think, and you don't change, right? You are too small. You are too small to be able to weather a big storm, but you are too big to be nimble. You'll be driven out of business. That's why we're very bullish on small companies and entrepreneurs. And you mentioned entrepreneurs in the emerging market. We're especially excited about that. And I'll tell you the reason why. The emerging market are kind of the places that they don't have the luxury to not change, right?
Exactly. For instance, my point.
Right. So if I'm U.S. government, I'll just print $9 trillion and pump in the market. No problem. Right. Because I'm the only game in town. I'm the reserve currency. I'll just print. But if you're island XYZ, right, in my mind, you're island XYZ, you have no business in printing your own currency. Right. As I said, a government's job is to supply military infrastructure, identity. Commerce is currency, but here's a problem, right? It's a IT, you're providing IT for transmitting e-commerce, right? but you're creating your own currency. That's a huge overhead. If you're a population of, I argue, if you're a population of less than 10 million people, it's not worth it for you to have your own currency because it's too expensive. The overhead is too high.
The printing itself is already expensive.
Just the printing, yeah. And then imagine.
We recently had the shift with the 500 euro bills. You know, we had, well, nobody liked them pretty much. So right. They switched the 500 euro bills for a lot of 100 euro bills. That operation of shifting it costed 22 million euros just to change. I mean, so if you're a small country and you like 5 million people, that's not doable. You can't.
I was
recently in Africa, in Gambia, and I had these banknotes. They were hardly recognized. These countries are so poor, they can't even print decent money.
Right. So it's basically like, I'll give you two examples. One is the telephone example. The companies were too poor, they go directly to mobile phone, right? If you're too poor to have your own currency, what do you do? Right? You get rid of the lines. You go mobile. You go digital currency immediately. Now, while you're at it, why stop at that? Why do you want to have your own Federal Reserve, your own central bank? It's too much work. If you're 10 million people, focus on something else you're good at, right? Outsource it, right? You can maintain the control, right? But then the technical implementation, outsource it to somebody, right? Outsource it to somebody. And that's why in our view, if you look at cryptocurrency and blockchain, there are four different areas of focus. And I think in the pandemic, you'll see that. The first area is store of value. As countries print lots of money, right? You will need certain asset to protect the value, right? So without saying so, everybody would say it's Bitcoin. Great, it's Bitcoin, right? The second one is payment, right? Payment, you know, George talked about democratizing, you know, finance, banking unbanked. All of that is just enabling people to trade, right? Most of the world, as you mentioned, you know, it's emerging market. It's simple people. People just want commerce. They want to be able to trade a cow with an elephant and get a change, right? Because it's not a one-to-one trade. I need to get something back. Whether I get that back in local currency or I get it back in US dollars or get it back in, Ethereum, I don't care, right? They don't care, right? It's all abstract, right? And then the next one is trading, right? So I think that blockchain, cryptocurrency, I like to joke, it's still a hobbyist casino right now, right? People are just kind of gambling their money, right? So the biggest business in cryptocurrency right now is trading, right? But I think it's a necessary first step for these people to make money and subsidize R&D for good applications. Once we find the killer applications, then the trading piece would actually become very small. At the moment, it's kind of the killer app, the most profitable app, but it's not a it's not healthy, right? But I think it'll change, right? And the more
use cases you will get, more change you'll see. And it's all depending on actual economic use cases that people will adapt to. I mean, people will use things that are useful. That's the basis of it.
Absolutely. And then it'll come. It'll come,
it's right? It's next stage in blockchain. I'm convinced of that. Yes.
Yeah, it'll come, right? It'll come. I mean, George talked about many applications. So DeFi is the one application that I see, you know, could be sort of that fourth area that we like. You could provide some immediate value, right? So for instance, in Europe, you have the German bonds are now negative yield, right? So it's so hard. We talked to our investor. It's so hard to find yield, right? They want to find return, right? So you could potentially create some financial products that create yield for people, right? You know, I already see the collateralized lending, for instance, right? That's a very common way to, you know,
You know, look back at the crisis, you know, you were around in 2008 when everything, you know, went literally the other direction as we all wanted it. I mean, we saw that the volume due to Basel 1, 2, and 3 for lending in banks was dramatically reduced. We saw that, you know, because a loan of 10 million cost just as much work as a loan of $10,000 for the corporate job.
Right.
We saw that whole market shrink tremendously with, you know, 75% was gone. And you saw this whole ICO thing, this whole, it started with crowdfunding, which basically sort of donation area. There were some tax advantages. Right. Well, that whole thing emerged. And then, of course, we had the ICO boom, which was another corner. Do you think we are about to see something similar in the next stage of development of decentralized finance? Because as an individual, it's hard to get a bank account in Europe. It's hard to get loans. Do you see a similar development will stimulate this whole decentralized finance now because of the pandemic issues that the banks are seeing right now?
I think I've always believed that it's going to happen, right? So for my job is to make predictions, and I always cheat and I say, well, this is going to happen. But the real critical question is how long it takes. Because I could make a prediction right now. I think DeFi is going to happen. It's a matter of time. It will happen. It goes without saying. It's a natural evolution that, you know, the finance industry become more efficient. Just like, you know, some countries never had landline telephones. Some country may, you know, have a larger DeFi, you know, than the U.S., right? And so the question is how long? And I truly believe this pandemic is causing governments worldwide to print money. And because of that, their citizens, in some cases, will be forced to adopt the decentralized financing. I'll give an example of how I got convinced, right? I got into Bitcoin in the 2013 timeframe, you know, bought it as a sort of a novelty, right? But in 2014, we made an investment in a company called BitPagos. And this is a Latin American, I think it's an Argentinian company. They're basically the Coinbase of Argentina. Through that company, I learned that there were people who were basically using Bitcoin to buy and sell, you know, vegetables and meat and produce in the grocery store, right? Because it was too expensive and too awkward to use U.S. notes, and their local currency was depreciating, right? So I think that's going to happen again. Why? Because government prints so much money, right? And I don't know which country or exactly when, but I think there's a ticking time bomb, just like 2008, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I was going to say if we're lucky, right? If we're unlucky, this will happen very quickly, right? This is a crisis. In a way, it's lucky for blockchain adoption, but unlucky for humanity, right? But I think it could happen very quickly. And it's one of those things, if that happens to one or two countries, just watch. The press would make sure all the other citizens in the world know, and then people would look at blockchain once again, and you'll have that second adoption, right? And you'll find interesting killer apps, DeFi, and all the user UX UI issue would actually get solved over time. Because right now it's just, you know, techno geeks like me who use, you know, MetaMask, like that no one is going to use that. But I think over time, as soon as the need comes, the UX UI will come. They'll come hand in hand. And some of the companies that don't do a good job, they'll get driven out of business, and that's okay.
I think that's a very healthy situation. You know, I think inefficiency and lack of results, like in any situation, you know, get punished in the end. That's always the case. History will prove that. I want to thank you so much for your contribution, Andy. It's really appreciated you stepping in at the last minute and give us such a clear insight on your views on the future. I hope we can see you again in one of our other conferences.
Absolutely.
See how this development in decentralized finance, because I feel like it's in a roller coaster right now since the pandemic started. Europe was not awake in January when all this started. We were very late. Other areas in the world were even later. And now you see an immense roller coaster movement in the financial sector, in the banking, in the enormous debt creation that's going on. And we already had an enormous debt creation in Central Europe due to the fact that, you know, we were buying bonds together, 6,000 billion of it. Guys, and we all have to pay back. So how this is all going to evolve, it's going to have pressure, I think, on the economic possibilities for entrepreneurial growth. So I think decentralized finance can play a very vital role in that whole development. So I hope to see you sometime soon to talk some more
Absolutely.
About because he's very, very excited. I think we are witnessing history in the making. That's strongly my feeling about all this. So I want to thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you.
Hope to see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Blockchain DNA podcast. Make sure to visit our website and follow us on social media at DNA by Metaverse or at MVS DNA. Till next time.